It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Hope you enjoy the show and you're enjoying. Well, it's been a, depending on where you are, it's been a little bit of a challenging August. As we've had, as certainly many of you are aware, just torrential rains and now flooding in southern Illinois. I spoke last week about how we finally looked like we had a great growing season and would provide really good habitat for deer and turkeys and waterfowl this fall with finally riparian areas that were in good shape. And now many of them are underwater. So the food base that looked very good is now very bad. And for flooding at this time of the year, there's no recovery. We're into August. And so when a plant goes underwater, whether it's corn or soybeans or millet or buckwheat or any of the natural foods, they don't have time to grow again and make a seed. So this is a really bad deal from the point of view of food for wildlife. I'm going to start off this morning talking about something that's taking place on the East Coast, which has the attention of a lot of people, and it's actually something that could be very, very bad for the future of the sport fishing industry. And I like to talk about positive things on this show and moving forward in conservation. But the striped bass population along the Atlantic seaboard, which is equivalent to our Lake Michigan salmon fishery, has been just in a free fall. And it's not an occurrence that just happened here in 2016. It's been going downwards over the last half dozen years or so. I attended a summit, if you will, of conservation leaders in Boston on Monday to talk about what's going on with striped bass. And some of the individuals in the room reported that the recreational bass catch is down about 80% from where it was 6 years ago. That's a huge drop. And it's worth hundreds of millions of dollars to communities up and down the eastern seaboard that rely on recreational fishing for a means from everything from filling hotels to guides to selling fishing tackle. The American Sport Fishing Association is now very involved. And it's sort of a coming together and awakening of what is taking place on the Atlantic seaboard with a species that 30 years ago was very rare. And the United States government, led by Senator Pell from Rhode Island, passed a law which banned commercial fishing for striped bass in U.S. waters. The problem is it's also a state's rights issue. And while a half dozen states on the Atlantic seaboard have banned commercial fishing for striped bass, Maine and states such as that have banned it, you cannot fish commercially, which means you can't as a fisherman, whether you're in a commercial boat or a sport fisherman, you can't catch a bass and go and sell it. Other states such as Massachusetts and New York and Rhode Island and Maryland, very big areas for striped bass, do not have a prohibition against commercial fishing. So we are setting up for one of the real battles in the fishing industry, a battle between the recreational sport fishermen and the entrenched commercial interests. And it's a battle it's not about science. It's pretty clear that the commercial fishermen take the top end of the food chain, whereas sport fishermen, while they catch many, many more fish than commercial fishermen because they outnumber them about, for every commercial fisherman, there's about 1,000 sport fishermen. So sport fishermen actually catch more fish, but they catch them and keep them in limit areas, which allowed the brood stock to survive, whereas commercial fishermen catch the big stripers, which are the breeding stock. Stripers don't breed for a couple of years. It would be a little bit like if you went into a bass pond in Illinois and you took all the breeding fish out, you had lots of smaller breeding fish, and every time they reached breeding age, they were being taken out. Pretty soon, you wouldn't have any fish in the pond. And that's essentially what's going on in the eastern seaboard with striped bass. As their numbers are declining, it's being felt that the breeders are being taken out. So it's an issue that's relevant across the country, whether commercial fishing interests, whether it's red snapper down in Florida, whether it's redfish on the Gulf Coast, whether it's salmon on the West Coast. The conflict between commercial fishing and recreational sport fishing is ever increasing. There are many more recreational sport fishermen than there are commercial fishermen. They actually deliver a far greater economic value to the economy. It's not a question of economics. It's more a question of traditions and how we want to deal with something. It's a little bit like it's a little bit like American apple pie. The commercial fisherman's been a part of America since the very beginning, and we now they're slowly getting squeezed out. But in the case of striped bass on the East Coast, they may not be getting squeezed out fast enough. The bass population, it continues to crater. And the other part of this equation, and many of you are probably saying, well, I go into a restaurant and I can buy striped bass, or I go into the market and there's striped bass for sale. Should I not be doing that? The answer is almost 100% of those, or 95% of those, are commercially raised. They're called swipers, and it's a striped bass walleye mix, and they're raised commercially. They also raise striped bass commercially. So much of the striped bass, about 95% of the striped bass in a restaurant or in a market, according to the American Sport Fish Association, are actually commercially raised. So the wild commercial fishery is not that big, it's not that important, but it certainly appears right now to be having a devastating impact on the future of one of the biggest fisheries on the East Coast, the striped bass fishery. So that's what's been going on in the East Coast, where I've been for the past week in Boston. And then also I can tell you that for many years, if those of you who listen to the show for a while know that I too have an affliction for catching striped bass, particularly on a fly rod, and I've had the great pleasure of doing that for many years running off the East Coast in Maine. And this year, the time I went, which I've always gone, that window, there were no striped bass. I did not catch a striped bass, and basically you used to see a situation where certainly many of the rocky peninsulas and jetties and things, people would be shore fishing for striped bass with fly rods, with bait. You could drive up and down the coast of Maine right now in a boat, and you would hardly find anyone fishing for striped bass. They have just all but disappeared. Moving on from striped bass, before I take a break, I want to quickly talk about federal lands, as I've talked quite a bit about over the past months, this issue of transferring federal lands to states. There was a really good article written by Jamie Williams, who is president of the Wilderness Society, that appeared in the New York Times. And the Wilderness Society is not necessarily an organization that is overly friendly to people who believe in hunting and fishing. While they've done a lot of good work through the years, they tend to be much more of an organization that wants things to be bought, locked up, and the key thrown away. Jamie Williams, though, as head of the Humane Society, head of the Wilderness Society, that's a Freudian slip, because the Humane Society, as we know, doesn't favor any kind of hunting or fishing. Jamie Williams is an avid sportsman, an avid outdoorsman, and he wrote a really good op-ed in the New York Times this week about how Congress is trying to subvert the will of the American people to free up federal lands for state ownership and then ultimately sale. And his number one target is Congressman Richard Bishop, who is from Utah, who has been the leading proponent of an agenda to dispose of America's public lands. This took place in Puerto Rico recently, where in a must-pass piece of legislation, a major part of Puerto Rico was going to be turned over to the it's not even a state, but turned over to the territory of Puerto Rico and ultimately for sale. And also in May, the House approved a defense authorization bill that included a provision to transfer to the Air Force jurisdiction over a large part of the Desert National Wildlife Refuge in Nevada. The Defense Department hadn't sought the 850,000 acres and had opposed a similar effort by Bishop last year. Nonetheless, the House of Representatives passed the measure that also would have stripped away existing conservation safeguards. In this case, the refuge in Nevada was established in 1936. It provides habitat to bighorn sheep, as well as sage grouse and a number of other sport species. And it's the largest national wildlife refuge in the lower 48. It's 850,000 acres. And in a sleight of hand and the sign of a pen, the House of Representatives would turn that over to the Defense Department, carte blanche. Fortunately, that didn't go anywhere. But what is taking place is increasingly representatives and senators from the western states, as part of what we call the Sagebrush Rebellion, are slipping into legislation measures that will enable federal lands to be turned over to the states. And one might think, well, that's great. Better home rule, closer to the land, we'll get better management. The reality is, if any federal lands in the state of Illinois, for example, are turned over to the state of Illinois, what do you think is going to happen? We don't even have enough money to manage our own state parks and to open our public hunting areas. So it's a little bit of a misguided effort, which is gaining steam. And I continue to talk about it because I think the transfer of federal lands to the states is a very bad idea. I think of giving the states more input in how their federal lands and the states are managed is a very good idea, and it will bring pressure to bear to have the resources expended and utilized to manage them properly. But transferring them over to the states is not something we should think very highly of. I'm going to be back in just a moment, and when I come back, I want to talk a little bit about what is going to take place with in Illinois with the state duck stamp program, as well as the federal duck stamp program and the dedicated funds in the state, which are tied up in the legislation to get a budget in Illinois, and also the initiative to clean up the Chicago and Calumet River and the waterways of northeastern Illinois. Thanks for listening. I'll be back in just a moment. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from your Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Winter is here, and it's always tough on the road. But when the going gets tough, the tough get going. And nothing is tougher than the 2016 Chevy Silverado. Silverado is the longest-lasting, most dependable pickup on the road. With all-steel construction, Silverado is built to tame Chicago's winter weather. And Silverado's towing package offers 11,400 pounds of towing capacity. Perfect for hauling your snowmobiles. I love pulling my neighbors out of their snowdrifts. And right now, you can get $7,250 total savings on a 2016 Chevy Silverado All-Star. $7,250. That really warms my heart. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and get all the details. Or head to your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer today and pick up a pickup that works as hard as you do, on the road or off. Chevy Silverado is one tough customer.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio, 720 out of Chicago. Hope you're enjoying the show. I'm going to start the next segment here with the time we have left before I talk about the effort to clean up the Chicago River with just a quick comment about what's happening with dedicated funds. In the federal government, the federal duck stamp program, which is viewed as the single most successful conservation program in the history of conservation, zero funds, not 1 cent of the federal duck stamp can be used for administrative overhead. All of it has to go to acquire properties or lease properties or get easements on properties that will benefit waterfowl. It was set up in 1935 by a group of individuals who did not believe that Congress would leave it that way, so that they, in fact, wrote into the law that the federal government cannot take administrative overhead. Since then, many states across the country have created their own state duck stamp, Illinois being one of them. Illinois' duck stamp program, when it was first created in 1975, led by an effort by Tony Dean and Jim Scheer. Jim Scheer is still a great advocate for the duck stamp program. There was no administrative overhead taken out. As time's gone on, people don't pay attention. The legislature doesn't want to fund things. Slowly, the state has put its hooks into the state duck stamp program, as it has the state habitat stamp program, and started to take administrative overhead. The exact amount of administrative overhead now being taken is not known, but it is believed to be that over 70% of every dollar, 70 cents plus on every dollar that comes into the sale of the state duck stamp in Illinois is in fact used for administrative overhead, leaving less than 30 cents on the dollar to go to the actual purpose. So as the Department of Natural Resources has been emasculated by the Blagojevich administration and then the Quinn administration, its funding is about a third of what it was. The employees had no way to be paid. So the natural thing to do was to start stealing from the dedicated funds, and that's exactly what's happened. A couple of weeks ago, the director of the DNR, along with the governor, began an initiative to try to change this as they became aware of this. It's just one of the many problems we have in the state of Illinois with our fiscal mess. But in the case of conservation, imagine this. The individuals who go waterfowling in the state of Illinois, go waterfowl hunting, purchase a state duck stamp, and their full expectation is that all that money is going to go towards acquiring habitat, managing habitat, leasing habitat, getting easements on habitat. And in fact, the overwhelming majority of that money is now going to pay for computers in Springfield, to pay for salaries, to pay for health care, to pay for individuals that were always funded out of the general revenue. It's the reason, the very reason that Congress in 1935, when the federal duck stamp program was passed, those individuals behind it put it in the law that no administrative overhead could be taken. And I would offer that in Illinois, we need a similar law. It's been proven that we cannot trust the legislature to safeguard our dedicated funds. We know that Governor Blagojevich consistently raided those funds and used them for other purposes to the point where the state of Illinois actually had to pay back to the federal government funds that were illegally used under the Pittman-Robertson Act. We are in a safe situation now where, despite the current governor's best efforts, the legislature won't provide any funding for the Department of Natural Resources to cover the expenses of waterfowl management. So they're left with no choice but to pay the salaries of the waterfowl biologists out of the state duck stamp fund. It's wrong. It was never intended to be that way. And I know that Jim Scheer, who listens to this show frequently, Jim, if you're listening this morning, the program that you championed and helped get the state to pass in 1975 is not following what you convinced tens of thousands of waterfowl hunters in Illinois to lobby for and to have passed. Instead, it's become a program that, once again, now is just part of the entire fiscal mess of the state of Illinois. And we are seeing funds that were dedicated to habitat management instead being taken and used, as I said, for salaries and health insurance and all kinds of other things in the Department of Natural Resources. It's wrong, and hopefully we can get it changed in the coming months, or certainly in the legislative session. We need to return to a situation where the sportsmen and women of Illinois can trust the Department of Natural Resources in the state of Illinois to use the resources for the purposes in which they're intended. Certainly that's not taking place now when you have over 70% of the habitat fund, over 70% of the duck stamp fund being used for non-purposes that they were not intended to be used for. And it's just something that the taxpayers of Illinois and those of us who buy the stamps, we just shouldn't tolerate. And hopefully we can get it changed. We have a governor in Illinois who would like to get it changed. We have a legislature in Illinois that does not want to get it changed. They don't want to fund their obligations. And so essentially they're stealing from other sources. And in this case, they're stealing from the waterfowl hunters and the upland bird hunters in the state of Illinois. More on that in the coming weeks, as this is now becoming an issue that's more widely understood. I thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the show. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.